Nicole Brandon with Unlimited Life, and welcome to the show. I am so excited for today's guest. When we talk about what it's like to live an unlimited life, what it's like really not to have boundaries, not to have borders, to be able to live this life of freedom, this life of flight, I can't think of a better guest than today's guest, which is Annalisa Ranetti, because Annalisa lives without boundaries whatsoever. She lives between countries. She speaks all these languages. She's able to translate things. She's able to actually break through information, share information through the internet, through her voice, through her writing, through her PR, through her marketing. It's just, it's incredible. It's almost like there's not a door that's left closed. She's able to just walk through everywhere and be able to share this joy and this exuberant life and this incredible love for humanity and passion wherever she goes. And so I'm so thrilled that she's coming on, and there's so much that I want to talk to her about. We can do like 100 shows just with Annalisa Ranetti as our guest. And so I'm so thrilled that we're starting the year, because this is really when we talk about what it's like to live an unlimited life, not to have boundaries, not to have walls, not to have hurdles, and really to be able to step anywhere, to be able to step through. And imagine growing up in a different country, leaving that country, going to school in another country, speaking that language so impeccably that you actually become a master of that language and that word, and able to translate all of these different languages through art, through talent, through humanity, through people. And so how does one live like that? How does one get those kind of jobs? How does one leave their family, their friends, and everything they know, and just get on a plane and without knowing anybody, go to an unknown place and start over and become a success in that world? And so we're going to talk to Annalisa about all of those things, and it is such a joy and such a privilege and such an honor to welcome her. So Annalisa, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow, what an introduction, by the way.
Oh, my gosh, no. You know, I was looking at your bio, which is absolutely amazing, and you've just crossed so many lines. I mean, you've gone from being a translator to working in PR to literally working with the internet to working with individuals to working with books. I mean, how does, you know, we talk about a lot on the show when you're little, when you're like 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, and when people say, I'm going to be an astronaut, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be Miss America, I'm going to be a vet. You know, what, did you know that you were just going to be able to, like, be like a peacock and have all these incredible colors and share all this artistic talent with the world?
Not when I was 7, but I do remember when I was about to enroll to college in Italy. You have to choose your specialization at first. So you just enroll to college and you're studying that major the whole entire time. You cannot change major halfway. If you want to change major, sure, great, you start from zero again. So you choose your school right out of high school. You choose your life. And I wanted to become a psychologist. And then as I'm in line going to sign up for psychology, I start thinking, well, I'm never going to be able to charge anybody, because anybody who's going to come through my door is going to have a problem. How can I charge people to solve their problems? And I remember specifically in that moment going, but I can be a bridge. I can be a bridge between people. I can make them communicate. I can help them in their communication. And those are paid jobs, because anybody can learn a language. But if you did not, for whatever reason in your life, and you need an interpreter because you're a CEO or you have a company or you're a doctor who gave its life to medicine but now wants to spread that, it's not a problem. It's a willingness to bridge between cultures, to bridge between languages. So I can be a bridge. And so I decided to be a bridge.
That's amazing. And I was looking, you know, on your bio, it says you speak English, Italian, Spanish, French, and German. Is that
true? Yes. I speak 5 languages. I used to be very fluent in German when I was in high school. I started in high school studying foreign languages. Well, I studied English when I was 8. But thinking about really going for foreign languages, I started with high school. And I remember in high school, my parents used to send me to Germany every summer, and which was a blast, of course. But I used to go to the south of Germany. Now, the south of Germany still speaks, even the young generation still speaks dialect, their dialect. And they rather speak English sometimes, they speak proper German. So I had to learn the dialect. So on top of having to learn proper German, I had to learn the dialect if I wanted to chill with my peers. So it was kind of an experience to be there and live with them, because I've never traveled. Most of the times that I traveled, I wouldn't say never, but every time that I studied, I traveled for studying, I would always spend time with the family. I would never go and study in a school. I would always go to school, but it would be staying with the family and then go to school, as opposed to being in a hotel and then going to school. So I always mingled with the different cultures, which is fabulous, because learning a language is learning a culture. Learning a language is learning the past of these people, where they're coming from, and the beauty of learning languages is that you can understand so much for just one word and know where it comes from, and the history that each word has is so fascinating. So it just brings you into a whole scenario of what these people went through, what their history is, and so you get so close to their culture that it then becomes almost like living separate lives every time you speak a different language.
That's incredible. You know, as you talk about that you were living with families, and I'm going to go sideways for just a second here, only because I have the honor and privilege of knowing you, and I know that you've hosted students that have come here from other countries. You're now in America, and you know, you've invited other young people into your home to stay with you. And so what is that like on the other side, to be the family receiving a child coming from another country and teaching the American culture or language or world?
Well, as you said, I started when I was 14 with being the hosting family of an Australian girl. And it was very interesting because when she came, I had never experienced outside of Europe. I had experienced Europe, but never outside of Europe. And Europe is small. So you travel from a country to the other, and it takes you from Milan, it would take me an hour or two, and I would just be in a different country. So when she came, she used to say, you know, in Australia, you go 6 hours away from home, you're still in Australia. Here, you go 6 hours away from Italy, you are anywhere. You can be in Germany, you can be in Switzerland, in Austria, in France, and it's so different. And to me, it was just funny when she said that. And then, of course, I moved to the United States, and I experienced that, and I think to myself, well, yes, I'm in L.A., so within about 2 hours, I can be in Mexico. So it's a little bit of a change, but ultimately, I can fly for 3 hours and still be in the United States. Different part, but it's still the same country. And so when I had my student come in, you know, this is about 20 years after I had my first experience as a host family, I now became the host family again for an Italian girl. And it was very interesting to see that through her eyes and to experience it through her eyes, because I got to see what I saw when I was traveling, and I got to experience a different side of it. So I had to tell her how lucky she was. And she came up to me one of the last few weeks that she was there. She came up to me and she said, you know, I have to tell you that I learned two things from you. I have learned what it is to give, and I have learned that no matter how much I think that my life is miserable, I have seen nothing of what a miserable life is. And this is a girl who is, her parents are divorced. She's went through some drama in her family between her mom and her dad, obviously. Typical divorce stuff. But ultimately, she has had a loving environment all her life. So she really doesn't know what it is to be in a public school in the United States with a gun detector at the door, with cops coming in because they're arresting one of the students, with the Army and the Navy coming in and trying to recruit 18-year-old people to send them to Afghanistan. So to see her come home every day and go, why would I want to do that? I'm 18. Why do I want to go and enlist in the Army? And having to explain that to her and what it means to be that person and see her understanding a new world, that was precious. It was precious.
Oh, that's incredible. So for people that are here in America that are thinking about sending their children abroad to study for a semester or to stay with the family, what would you share with those parents? Do you think it's a good experience or a good idea to send your children abroad?
Oh, absolutely. I have learned so much through traveling. I have learned so much in life through experiencing other families. I have appreciated my family so much, and so did the girl that came a few years ago to me. She's learned to appreciate what she has so much more. And of course, there are a lot of organizations that go through that. And if anybody ever needs a word of advice or a connection, I'm here to help if they want to. If they can contact you and you know, through you, I can give you a hand. That'll be my pleasure. But it's an absolute great experience. I would recommend to people of any age, heck, not just students, but if you are in your 20s, in your 30s, in your 50s, it doesn't matter when, if you have the possibility to live even just for a month outside of your comfort zone, outside of your country, and find a place. Now, I don't know if I can say it's not publicity, I'm just saying a name, but there is a website called Airbnb, which is basically people putting up their spare bedroom, and I am not paid, so I'm just saying because I think it's a great experience. It's people putting up their guest room for rent, and so through that you go and live with a family, but as an adult. So you have your own private room with your private bathroom, but it's still being a roommate of a local for a month, for 2 months, for a year, for however long as you want. And that gives you really a chance to live and not just see the beauty of a country, not just read about a country, but really experience it firsthand and get to live it and really be pray love kind of a deal and not just an outsider, but really be inside of that country the proper way.
That's great. Can you tell me that website once more?
Airbnb. Air as in the air you breathe. Airbnb,
right.
Like bed and bath.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What a great idea. That's just amazing. That really is. And then, you know, I've got so many questions for you, but how does one leave their home and their city? I mean, you came to school in America without really knowing anybody. It was all brand new. And was it scary? Was it exciting? Was it what made you come to this country to study? What was the impetus to do that?
It wasn't scary at first because I had been around other countries and I'd been studying abroad for pretty much my whole entire time during high school. It was not scary for me to just pick up and go. I had a friend who invited me here, so that was a little bit of a, if you want, a safety net or a security blanket. And then I met my angel in the City of Angels, whom I'm speaking with right now. So that was, there was no way I could possibly ever have fear at that point. But the decision before it was just exciting. It was just 9 months. It was supposed to be just 9 months. So it was not, it was never, I'm picking up and I'm leaving and I'm never coming back. The problems came when the reality was I'm never coming back. So that took a little bit of adjusting and that took a little bit of soul searching. And LA is such a different city that from anything I've known before, which kind of was scary at that point when I decided to stay for good. But at first, when I decided to leave and just come over to study for 9 months, no, it wasn't at all scary. It was exciting. It was a great experience. It was a way to see and live something that was so different and so distant from my own culture and from my own country that I just saw the excitement.
Wow. I mean, that's so incredible. And did you come over specifically to be a translator?
I came over on a 9-month studying visa to study screenwriting, because at that point I had started doing film festivals in Italy. So I started being a translator and an interpreter at film festivals. So I loved it. And I thought, Lucas, this could be my career, being the person that escorts or stays within the celebrities when they arrive in town and they are promoting their movie at the festival, and then translate or subtitle whatever movie needs to be translated or subtitled when they get submitted if they're not subtitled or translated yet. So that's the way it worked back X years ago. If the movies were in English and they were not subtitled or dubbed, then we would provide that service for them. So that was the pre, and then during the festival, I was talking to the celebrities that were there to represent their movies. I was doing the Q&A, so I was translating the questions and then the answers from directors, actors, producers, whoever was there to support the movie. And I had fun, so I was like, okay, great, let's go and study in the United States for 9 months, because I don't think anybody could ever consider themselves a translator unless they have experienced that culture and that country for at least a year, 9 months to a year. It's a good time, because otherwise you don't understand a lot of the cultural related issues that are behind the words that you're translated. So, and then 9 months became almost 11 years, but that was the idea was just to do 9 months.
That's so amazing to me. It really is. And when I look at the diversity of your background, what is ARS? I saw that on your
bio. That was my company. That's why I said originally I was supposed to stay only 9 months. When I came here, I had my own company, my own translation company. And when you study translation, they pretty much tell you that everybody expects you to be in their field, even though technically the only thing you're expert in is words. So doctors assume that you're as good as they are at medicine, and computer people think that you are computer savvy, and then you have people in the travel industry that think you're of course you know about tourism because you speak languages. So you have to become an expert into every field that you translate. And even if it's just linguistically, people assume that if you know the language and if you know the lingo, then you have to know everything about it. And so it's like you having 25, 30 degrees in 25, 30 different things, which you don't have, because I'm not that pretentious to say I know everything about anything. I just know the words. So it's really interesting when people assume that, and you're like, no, I need you to explain things to me because I am not an expert in your field. I know the words that you use, but they're just words to me. And so that was at the beginning. It was an effort on my end when I still had my company. The coming to LA was an effort on my end to become an expert in the one field I love, which was movie and entertainment. And heck have I become an expert in that.
You know, I'm glad that you said that, because I was looking and it's so diverse. I mean, when I look at a wheel and you just think every single part, you know, from rolling from one place to the next so smoothly. And, you know, I saw event coordination on there, and I saw that you were a project manager and a subtitle editor. And so what came next if there were, like, breadcrumbs down the path, you know? So you decided to learn film and entertainment, and then where did you go from there?
My life has been so blessed. I'm now at a point where I can tell people I have no idea how to tell you to look for a job, because I never looked for a job. I was always asked to do so and so job or get into that position, and which is highly flattering but sometimes scary. So it was just laid down for me. I started. This is one of my favorite stories. I was finished with school, and I had to find a job if I wanted to come back in the country, because once you're done with school, you can apply to a year of practical training, and you have the legal chance to work for a year, but if you leave the country without a job, then the chances to come back in the country, even though you have the right, chances coming back in the country are slim to none. Because they question, if you don't have a job, who says you're going to find it? Therefore, they're not going to let you in. So it's a week before I'm leaving for Italy to go and see my family, and I still haven't found a job. And I'm in my hairdresser, and I'm there, and she asks me, you know, typical hairdresser talk. So how are things going? And typical hairdresser talk, bitching. So I'm saying, well, I haven't found a job yet, and I'm really scared because I don't know if I can come back in the country, which is really a problem. And she goes, well, what are you looking for? And I'm like, well, I sent the resume to the subtitling company about 4 times, and I haven't heard back. And she goes, interesting. My friend is the HR person in that company that desperately looking for an Italian translator. How is it that you've never been contacted? I'm like, I don't know. So as I'm getting my hair done, she calls her friend going, do you know that you have this person ready to interview for you and she's ready to start working as soon as she comes back from the holidays? And so within a day, I had an interview and a job, and I just needed to go home for the holidays and come back and start working, which was insane if you think about it. And then from there, everything was just connected. Somebody had seen my job, and so they wanted me to move from that company to another company. And then my ex-husband was working as an event coordinator and needed help, so I just jumped in and helped. And they fell in love with me, so they offered me a raise from what I was making so that I could go and work with them. And then somebody else, again, offered me a raise on what I was making so that I could go and work for them. So my life has been just a series of people looking for me and searching me and wanting me, which is awesome now that I think about it. And it's never been something that I've chosen more than something that, you know, the universe had chosen for me.
Right, and that's what we love on this show when we talk about how does one lead an unlimited life. It's that fearlessness, the same way that you got on a plane to come to the mm-hmm. United States with only knowing one person, the same way that you had faith that you can go live with a family that you didn't know or that you could learn a language, you know, that you've never spoken before. The fact that you are so open to what's next and what's available to you and what's coming your way. And so that's, you know, we're looking for the secrets and the keys and the tools for everybody to be able to live a life like that. And are there any hints or any recommendations that you would share with the audience that you would say this is?
I would say this. People sometimes think that I am naive. People think that I am sometimes not, you know, guarded enough, that I let people in, that I'm not afraid instead of being guarded and instead of being skeptical. I just let it be, and I think that is something that people should learn to be more of. When you're a child and you trust everyone and you have this feeling of freedom because you don't know any better, things just happen to you, and they usually happen for the better. And whenever something bad happens, you don't sit there and think about it for your whole entire childhood. You just brush it off and you move on. And I think we have to go back to that a lot more as adults and thinking, okay, I failed. If every time I fell when I tried to walk, I just stopped walking, then I would still be crawling. And if you look at children, they fall a million times on their butts. And granted, there is a little cushion from the diaper, but even if there wasn't, they would still be trying. So
you know,
there's always going to be a little diaper that kind of can help you when you fall and not making you hit that hard the ground. But take example from that and keep just getting up and brush it off and try again. And try again until you walk and then you run and then you are an incredible person.
That's such great advice. It's so funny that you said that this morning. I got woken up very early by little hand knocks. My next door neighbors are two twins, tiny, tiny little girls. And
Aww. They
came to knock on my door to tell me that they learned how to ride the bike without the third wheel. You know, how they could no longer be on a tricycle. They learned how to do the two-wheel thing, and they wanted to show me. And so I went outside and watched them on the two-wheel bicycles, but of course they haven't learned to stop. So
if you only knew my story about stopping, but go ahead.
So, and then to watch them just, you know, throw their feet down on the ground to stop. And but it was, I mean, it was so much joy and such glee. And what a great way to wake up this morning to see these two tiny little, I mean, really little to be on a two-wheel bike too. But the fact that, you know, you're saying just to let yourself go and not be afraid to fall. And so I love that.
And, you know, not always there is something to break your fall, but it's okay. You can still get up and you can still try again. And don't lose the enthusiasm, because I'm sure that those little girls never lost their enthusiasm to ride the bike and never thought for one second, I'm going to give up. And if anything, they just laughed at and just went, okay, let's do it again. And we have to do that a little bit more in our life, I think.
That's wonderful advice. It really is, and I love that. And then, you know, and as I'm looking, that you were the subtitle editor, and so when you're looking at a television show or you're looking at a movie, and then you know that this movie is going back to your native country or language, are you saying exactly the words that they're saying on the screen? Are you saying the words that in your heart or your head you feel is the way that they want to hear it?
Oh, wow. Translating a movie, it's such a hard task, doing subtitles, because you have, first of all, you have a limitation, which is characters, because not everybody knows, but you cannot just write what you want. You have a certain amount of characters that can be at the on the screen at a certain time, because you have to take into consideration people have to read that line. So it takes X amount of time to read X amount of words. So when you're translating for subtitling, the number one challenge is being able to translate in words the whole sentence that they're trying to say. So you speak a lot faster than what you read. If you try and you do read a slight midget slower than what you would talk. And if there is a dialogue, especially think about one-hour dramas or police shows or anything like that, there's a lot of talk, back and forth, and quick, and let's go there. And it's hard to read that. So the number one challenge was not even linguistic. It was a matter of length. And then from there, if you're translating Friends, for example, comedic, any kind of comedy, it's the toughest thing to translate, because a lot of jokes are cultural. So I cannot make a joke about something that was going on in the 80s here, because nobody in Italy would know that. So sometimes you have to make a choice on whether or not you want to translate that joke, which is never going to translate, or if you want to make a joke that is similar to that, that relates to your culture, and which is going to be funny. So it's interesting sometimes, because you get then feedback from, yeah, it's not as easy as it looks. There is a lot of consideration behind subtitling. And it's really sad, because people that do subtitling are so underpaid for what they do and for what they have to put out. But that's a completely separate subject. And then you get feedback from people who are bilingual, who read the subtitles and listen to the movie, and they go, huh, interesting choice. That's not what they said. Or, interesting choice. A nice joke, but would it have been better to just translate what they said instead? So translations is so subjective. It's like art. Either you like a painting or you don't, and you can't just go back to the painter and go, can you do it again? Because I don't like it. Good luck with that. I really want to see that happening. Especially with people like Van Gogh or, you know, crazy painters. They go, no! So you just have to accept. And then when you're doing literal translations, that's where you have, that's the best in me. Because you have as much room as you want, first of all. And English into Italian, it's also so hard, because Italian is so much lengthier than English. So that's a double challenge. So when you're doing English into Italian for a novel, for example, then you can truly be an artist, and you can truly be a writer just writing somebody else's words and conveying the images and conveying the message and conveying the emotions behind what is written in a different language. And that's where you really become an artist of your own.
I just never thought about it as painting and artistry. I mean, that really is incredible when you think about it, that you make divine choices. You really do.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sharing somebody else. And to master a language that you know somebody else's language or another culture or another country's language so well that you can take that in and then totally, you know, weave that into something magical where people can, you know, hear it and see it and read it in another language in another world. It's really incredible. I remember that many years ago I was on a TV show called The Insiders. And The Insiders was BC. We were opposite Miami Vice. And it was with Stoney Jackson and Nick Campbell and Gail Strickland. And I was on the series. And I was in Rome. And I was at a hotel in Rome. And I turned on the TV. And I was on television. The Insiders was on. But I was speaking Italian. They had somebody else. I know Italian, and I remember sitting on the bed, and I was so mesmerized that I knew Italian. But it was so funny for me to see myself speak this other language and to hear the translation, because the cadence was so different than the way that I speak, and the energy was so different. But yet it totally worked for the show. You know, however they chose it, it totally worked for the program. And that, to me, was just incredible. And it's funny. It's a memory that I'll always have.
And the reason why I asked you why you can't is because very often when I used to watch shows back home, they were all dubbed. So growing up, of course, you don't think that they're speaking, that it's dubbed. You think those people are speaking. So kids grow up thinking that, you know, Johnny Depp, you, or anybody else that is dubbed in a movie back home, they actually do speak some languages. So I don't remember who it was, but they actually said that they were approached by a little kid going, "What do you mean you don't understand? But you speak it on TV."
It's funny. I sat on the bed at the hotel, and I was so captivated by the fact that I knew Italian.
Yeah, so sooner or later, somebody's going to approach you and go, "What do you mean? You were speaking it on TV."
Yes. It's funny. And I remember at one point you were telling me when you were working, translating, that there are different floors for different countries, but that in the lunchroom, how everybody was speaking their own native tongue and what that was like.
Oh, yeah. We had separate bays, sometimes separate floors when we were in the smaller office, and then we had a bigger office. So each language, well, the main languages, I should say, so English, French, French, German, Italian, and Spanish, we each had a bay, which meant a series of desks, usually put in a U shape, which really created a bay, and it was just the Italian bay or the French bay or the German bay. So already going through the offices, you would literally just step 3 feet aside and hear German, and then you go another 6 feet and you hear French. So you cross some borders every 6 feet. And then at lunch, obviously, you tend to stick to your peers, not because you don't appreciate the other cultures, not because you don't appreciate the other languages. It's nothing negative. It's because you're away from home, you're away from your family, you're away from your culture, you're away from it. So it's just like walking home again, even though you're not. So you try to stick with your peers because it's like going home again, even though you're technically still across an ocean, across the continent. So everybody tries to stick to their circle for that reason, so that they can feel at home, even if you are in a different country at work. So you get to the lunch room, and everybody takes lunch roughly at the same time. And you walk in, and there's like 6 tables, and each table is speaking a different language. And it's hilarious because and each table obviously is doing what they would do if they were at home. So we had our espresso coffee maker that would plug into the wall. and we will make espresso. And French people have their French press, so they will make French coffee. And Germans, we were not allowed beers, so Germans were very disappointed about that.
That's so funny. The idea that, you know, I remember that I had a friend that stayed here from Italy, and, you know, many years ago, and she had never been to America before, and she was so blown away. She said that in Italy, for something special, that you go out to dinner, and here for something special, that you dine in, like that you make a dinner party and invite people over. And so can you talk about that? Because I know that you've even done catering, and the cultural of, as you're talking about the French press or the cafe or the espresso, you know, was that different for you coming to an America? And
it still is. It still is. It's still, to me, that is probably one of the few things that I have not adopted culturally. I still invite people over, and I still have plenty of dinner parties and lunch parties and breakfasts and coffees. And so that is probably one of the cultural aspects that I have decided, subconsciously or consciously decided, not to adapt to. I will still go to the restaurant when it's something special and stay at home every other time. But, yeah, to me, cooking for people is a way of getting together. It's not something special in terms of, yes, you can do it special and you can have a party at home, but usually cooking for people is just normal. You just meet and you don't go out. You meet for coffee. And if you don't want to cook a full meal, because that is when it's special, when you do a 16-course meal, but if you don't want to cook a full meal, then you stay home and you invite people over for coffee. And then you open the cookie jar and you have cookies and you just sit and chat. So for me, the fact that everybody just ends their day at work and goes to the restaurant, it's still something that I have not adjusted to or accepted within as a part of my culture. And or like going for lunch, it's a little different. We do it back home too at this point because you're working through lunch. You don't have the luxury most of the times to work and live in the same town, and therefore it's hard to go home during lunch break, have lunch, and then go back to work. But at night, it's always at home. It's always at home. And when you want to see somebody and you don't want to invite them for dinner, because again, if you invite somebody for dinner, the new generation is a little different on that, meaning that they're okay with just having a potluck or buying pizza and having a pizza all together. But the proper way, if you invited somebody over for dinner, you have to cook about at least 6 courses, and it's a whole big deal. But if you invite somebody over for chit-chat, it's usually before dinner or after dinner or just after in the afternoon or after dinner. So they come, they have dessert, they have coffee, and they sit and chat. And so I still do that. So anybody who wants to come over for coffee, then you're more than welcome.
I love that idea. And I thought that, I mean, that really struck a chord in me to hear, for something special, we go out to dinner, and here, for something special, you dine in. And that, I mean, that's something I've really held on to. And it was interesting because last week I was in New York, and I went out to dinner with Julian Michael, the numerologist, and Julian is just amazing. And Julian and I went to a macrobiotic restaurant, and I don't think I've ever been to a macrobiotic restaurant. And I said to Julian, I mean, the food was delicious. It was, it was food I've never had before. Everything was amazing. And I said to him, what made you choose this restaurant? Like, of all the restaurants in Manhattan, you know, Manhattan has more restaurants than almost anywhere. This was his choice. And he said, when I go out, I always want to have something I can't make at home. If I can make it, if I can cook it, it's not so special. So I always want to go out for something that I couldn't do or wouldn't be able to figure out by myself. And that, to me, is special. And this restaurant was so special, you know, his company and the food. And so I love the idea of having people in and having people over and having that time and that family and that warmth and that all of that is just fabulous.
Oh, that's usually where I have the hardest time when I go out for to restaurants, is looking at the menu and go, oh, I can make that. Oh, and it would be so much cheaper than that. And then go next to the next item. Oh, I can make that. Oh, my God, they're overcharging for this. So I get stuff to order at the restaurant sometimes.
That's really funny. It's really, really funny. But
so I agree with him. If I go to a restaurant, it either is to eat something that my mom used to make. So it is to go and be at home. So I have a couple of restaurants in L.A. which are my favorite Italian restaurants that are my home away from home. And I go there and I eat like I'm at home. So I just get treated like I'm a daughter coming home for vacation. Or I choose something that, yeah, maybe I know how to make it, but it takes so much time and effort that maybe I'm not going to make it. Or that I don't know how to make altogether. So I totally relate to that. And I think that that's how it should be in general. If you make it a special experience, if you make that meal a special occasion, then the time you spend with that person is also going to be so much more special.
I love that. I mean, it's just the idea. And just everything, the way you weave your life is so beautiful. And, I mean, it really is because you go from the most intense, beautiful family situations and opening your home and offering students to come and stay with you to be able to share the artistic talents of others. And then I know the past few years you've been working for a company where you've done red carpet events and the awards. And so what is that like to go into the lifestyles of the rich and famous and be Robin Leach or something on the red carpet and being able to translate what that's like in this country, what's going on here, and in the thrill of it all?
You know, at the beginning it was exciting. And now looking at what a celebrity sometimes has to endure and has to go through and the kind of lifestyle that comes with the job that they choose, which is a career. It's nothing more than being a nurse, being a doctor, being a teacher, they just chose a different career. But because of the career they chose, they are not free to walk outside the door without having a paparazzi snapping a picture of them. They are not free to have an argument in their own home without being all over the news as, oh, they're breaking up. So it makes me understand sometimes how much better we have it when we're not famous rather than being famous. That is something that it's interesting because everybody always wants the rich and famous because they never think about what it means to be the rich and famous. And then when you get to see their lifestyle, when you get to see what it is to be the rich and famous, you feel sorry for them sometimes. And I'm sure that there are some of them who appreciate the attention and want the attention and need the attention because it's a drug. It is a drug, and you cannot get out of it. And I feel sorry for those people sometimes because it is the same kind of drug as any other drug, and it ruins you as much as any other drug. But to see some of those that have not chosen that, they just chose to share their passion for an art. And you would never go and stalk a musician, or most musicians. You would never go and stalk a nurse. You would never go out and stalk a doctor for as exceptional of a doctor as it can be. So why do you go out and stalk an actor? Why do you go out and stalk a singer? They are no different than any other person who do very well their job. Heck, there's teachers out there who form these people, who give these people the life that they're going to live, and you're not stalking them, and you're not even saying thank you to them most of the times, and yet we're stalking celebrities just because they look pretty or because they have money or because we think that they have this perfect life. So it's interesting to see how much people idolize these creatures, which are just simple people like we are, with problems like we do. And, you know, like my dad would say, and forgive me the image, but they go to the bathroom like we do.
Yeah.
They don't do anything different than we do. So it's just, they chose a profession that is different. And that's what we should probably look at and treat them a little bit more like humans, because a lot of them deserve to be treated that way and to be respected as humans.
I'm so glad that you said that. I really am, because it's true. Look at people whose lives are untouchable, and you think, gosh, can somebody have a minute of privacy or time? I know that just recently Jodie Foster had a chance to watch her speech. And if you haven't had a chance, you'll Jodie Foster speech. Cried like that in a very long time watching somebody speak, and she was talking about privacy and talking about, you know, what it was like to grow up that way and not negating the art or the talent or the joy, but for her children, for her family, for her life. And it was so beautiful and so honest and so heartfelt. And truly, I just sat there and I wept for what she has endured and what she has been through and what her deepest, longest desires of just for a little privacy and alone time. And it was really astounding to see. So I appreciate and thank you so much for bringing that up. And especially as one who's covering those celebrities, to have such compassion and care for them. I mean, how lucky they are that it's you and not somebody else.
And I am lucky enough that I can make sometimes a decision of not covering a certain event or not covering a certain issue, because sometimes it's just a pure speculation, or you can tell, and we even have jokes that go around the office going, you know, oh, today it's a slow news day, so we have to make something up, or you have to, like, go with what you have. We're not making something up, because we don't make things up for real. We don't. There are publications who do. I'm lucky enough to be with a publication who never makes things up, and I am so proud of saying that, because it is our pride and joy to say that if something is not confirmed, then we're not going to say it. But even when something is confirmed, so that person is having a bad day, or so that person is going through a rough moment in life, it's heartbreaking for me sometimes, and I get it, and it's heartbreaking also as a new person, because you know you have to give that information, you have to put that information out. And at the same time you go, but I really would like to just respect the family and keep it quiet. So when Paul Walker died a couple months ago, that's a perfect example. You need to report that. It's if you don't report it, you're just going to be the only one who doesn't report about it. So you're just going to make your fans mad because you don't report about it. But at the same time, there is so much heartbreak because a lot of the people in the news knew him personally. So you have to go through your grief and knowing that it has to go second, because you first have a duty as a journalist to put that out, and then you can take the moment to go, oh, crap, that was my friend. And now I want to check on him, and or, you know, or now I want to check on his family and make sure that the family is okay. And you know, I've had that once where there was something about a friend of mine who is an actor, and I guess like half of the people who live in LA, you have actors' friends, and he had just been pulled over. Well, he was having a bad day. He was having a run-in with the law, and I got concerned about him because I read the news, and I was like, oh, my God, for real? So I called him up, and I went, what the heck? I came to know things about you through the news, which is terrifying on a certain level, because I should not know that my friend is having a bad day through the news. But it's also sometimes helpful because it made me reach out to him and go, anything I can do, I'm here. So there's always good. If you want to look for it, there's always good in everything. So let's try to look for the good.
Absolutely. And I know that you and I had a conversation once before as well, that you were talking about, you know, what you do is not 9 to 5. You know, you were saying Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, whatever, you know, Paul Walker, as you're talking about, that people don't die, you know, between 9 to 5, that, you know, 9/11 and tragedies and nominations for the awards, whatever that is, that, that life happens. I remember there was a play In God's Hands, and they talked about how anything, you know, extraordinary in life happens in God's time, like the minute you're born, the minute you fall in love. Like, we never know when those things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what you do is kind of like being an emergency room doctor. You know, you're on call 24/7. And so what is that like to be posed and waiting for whatever is like the next thing, as you're saying, the way you live your life, to be able to report or to share or to unfold for somebody?
Well, there's some things that you're really looking forward to reporting, like the royal baby. Everybody was so excited, and it was such a milestone in history. This is going to be in the history books, the legit ones, the ones that you start in school for real. So those kind of things you're looking forward to report. So I was up all night because she decided to go in labor when it was our night. Thank you, Kate Middleton. I really love you for that. It was very thoughtful, though, for the British news because it was during the day. So how thoughtful was she towards her people? I was just in the wrong continent. But I was up through the night going through labor with her. So that was intense and kind of, you know, a little bit difficult to go through because I had my alarm set up every hour to go and check that the baby was born and then go back to sleep. Those are the news that you have fun, though, doing. Those, you know, you set up your alarm at 5 o'clock to see who got nominated, and it's never going to be, you know, your name, of course, but it still is exciting to see if you caught any of them, if you got any of them right in your ballot. You know, you bet at the office to see if you got any of them. So those are the fun news. And then you have those that you really don't want to give, divorces, separations, deaths. Bad news are bad news, no matter who's saying what. And it's really rare that you quote-unquote rejoice, or you just go, oh, serves you right, to somebody going through pain. So as much as everybody else goes through pain, it's painful to report those kind of things, and it's sad, and it really makes you want to reach out to that person and go, if you need a shoulder to cry on, you know, you can come here and have a cup of coffee. My very Italian self comes out again. Juan, I can make you dinner if you want.
That's funny. That's great. But, I mean, what an extraordinary life and extraordinary job. And then I know now, you know, when you were saying that you were a little girl or that you were in line, that you decided you wanted to be a bridge. And I know that right now you actually started working with an author and you're even being a bridge in that way. And so what was the impetus for that? Did you just say, okay, I really want to help translate words now, or because you fell in love with the writing, or is it something you've wanted to do for yourself?
The word quiz with Eric came about. Eric is a very good friend of mine, and I read the book and I fell in love with the book, and I'm a bookworm. I read a lot, especially when I was little. I was at the beach. I was the one at the beach with a stack of books and reading through novels as I was tanning my back. I would have almost, my back was more tanned than my front. But then growing up, as I was a teenager, you know, my back was always 3 shades darker than my front because I used to read all the times on the beach. And so I looked at his book and I noticed that it was self-published because there was, at the beginning in the leaflet, at the first page, there was no publisher. So I called him up and I said, hey, by the way, if you need help in marketing your book or if you need help in reaching, you know, I'm here to help. And that turned into such an amazing journey for me. Again, when I say that you have to be a specialist in every field that you get in as a translator, I mean it. And you have to research. You research in every field. So when he said yes to me, my first innate reaction was, okay, now I have to become an expert in publishing because I've never published a book. I've never done marketing for a book. So I completely immersed myself into that, and I've learned so much. And again, I bridged into another world once again. Amazing. It was such a great experience. And then coming up with strategies to advertise that, it's again a way to reach an audience. It's always the same, meaning that whether you're reaching an audience through translation, you're reaching an audience through art, you're reaching an audience through publishing or anything, when you're reaching an audience, you're reaching people, you're bridging towards those people. So we had to find a way to tell people that this is an amazing book and this is a book that you really want to read. So how do you talk to people when they know him as an actor? They know him from movies, and you tell them, well, now I write and what I write is good.
Quickly, I just wanted to, for those that are listening that don't know who Eric is, can you share who Eric is?
Absolutely. I'm talking about Eric LaSalle, actor, director. People mostly remember him because he was Dr. Benton on ER, or he was, actually most people remember him even more so for being this lazy boyfriend on Coming to America. And I honestly, when I met him because we danced in the same club. And we have mutual friends. So I met him because I have friends who were friends with him. So I remembered him from ER, but I did not remember him at all from Coming to America. So when somebody told me, oh, he's the one from Coming to America, I went on IMDb, and IMDb'd him, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's true. And to see him, now he has short hair. And to see him with the Jerry curls and the leather jacket, he made me laugh so hard that when I saw him next, I was like, oh, you were so sexy Coming to America. He still hates me for that. But that also, working with him and getting to know him and his world better, that also made me realize it, once again, what I was saying earlier about celebrities and about the doom sometimes of being a celebrity, or the hardship of being a celebrity, and he is such an amazing person. He's a genius on so many levels. He's this artistic genius who is totally 100%. And even if he hears me saying this, he's totally going to go, yeah, you're right. He is technically challenged. So for him to understand about computers and internet and programs and softwares and HTML, that is just gibberish to him. So here I am working in the internet and on computers for the last 20 years going, oh, no, but if you go this and that, and him looking at me, staring at me, and I have so much respect for him that, of course, I'm thinking to myself, well, if it's clear to me, of course it has to be clear to you. You're a genius. So it's been such an amazing relationship. It's such an amazing journey with him as well. And we've done pretty well. And now we're getting ready for book two. So that's exciting and stressful and exciting. So, I mean, if I'm finishing with exciting. So it's again, another way of becoming an expert in a field where I'm never going to be an expert in every field. Heck, I'm always going to be an expert in just one field, which is languages, and which is translating and understanding words and playing with words. But to have, it's being a translator somehow, and it sounds funny, but it is true, being a translator and being an actor, I think it's very similar. Because when you're an actor, again, you play a doctor, but you're really not a doctor. But you need to know how to be a doctor to play a doctor. And being a translator is the same thing. You're translating medical journals. You're not a doctor, but you need to be a little bit because you need to translate it properly. So it's my way of being an actress without the stardom attached to it.
It's so brilliant. I love that. And as you talk about being a master, one thing, being a translator, for so many people that are listening to this show, and this show is international, so we have people listening to the show all over the world. But so many people just know their native tongue, whatever country they've gone up in, that's the language that they know. And so what advice would you give to someone that wants to learn more than one language, or even that has a child and you want to make sure that your child has more than you have as far as being able to communicate with the world right now? We're such a global world, and where does someone begin to learn a language?
The one thing I will say is, first of all, choose a language of a culture that you want to learn about. Don't choose a language that can give you a job in the future, because that's not how you go about by learning a language. You want to learn a language of a culture that fascinates you, because with every word that you learn, you learn a little bit more of that culture. It's like having a million pieces puzzle, and by every piece that you put down, you see the picture a little bit clearer and a little bit clearer. So choose a language. No matter how hard it can be, or no matter how you think it's going to be the opposite of the one that you're speaking, choose a language of a culture that fascinates you. Because if you're fascinated by the culture, the language will come with it. And then just be patient. Be patient. Again, it goes back to the child crawling and learning how to fall, how to walk, and falling along the way. You do not become bilingual overnight. And it's just a matter of speak as much as you can. And the reason why I said choose a language of a country that fascinates you, of a culture that fascinates you, is because the more time you spend with people from that culture, with people from that country, the easier it's going to be to learn the language. And at first, it's going to be frustrating. And I remember when my little girl came over for her six-month studying program, the first month she spent with me. And she was Italian, and I'm Italian, and I could have totally just spent the month speaking English, speaking in Italian with her and not preparing her for what was lying ahead. And instead, I told her, the moment she got to my place, I picked her up and I said, this is the only time I'm going to speak to you in Italian for the next month. I'm having mercy today because you've been through quite some traveling, but as of tomorrow, I'm going to speak to you only in English. And the reason being is because the first month is going to be horrendous, but if you can go through the first month, then when you go to school, you're not going to have to translate mentally what the teacher is saying and trying to learn also what the teacher is saying. You will just need to go through the learning of the subject. And learning a foreign language is exactly that. At first, you're just going to hear a lot of sounds, and then those sounds will become words, and then all of a sudden, it will just start clicking more and more and more, and you'll start understanding. And as for the talking, just make a fool of yourself. Nobody cares. I can make a fool of myself even when I do interpreting job skills, and I laugh it off. It's fine. I remember one of my teachers when I was in college saying, you know, it will always happen to you that you don't understand the sentence. So you go into the mic and go, and this sentence I didn't get, I'm so sorry. We'll go to the next. Not really that, but you always will find something that you don't understand. Even now as a fluent master of English, I still have sentences that I don't understand, plenty of them. And either if I am on the job, I'm either going to stop the speaker if I can and say to repeat. If I cannot, I'll just understand the general gist of it. And I'm not going to blatantly be unprofessional, because there's always a professionalism involved. But if they're making some sort of blah, 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 yada, 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 that doesn't really have anything to do with the seminar that I'm translating, it's just a lot of talking to, like, introduce themselves in a way that it's so brilliant. And I'll just say that they're just making a very brilliant introduction of themselves. I'm sorry, the jokes are never going to translate. So if you want, I can make my own. And usually that's what it is. It's like you spend the first minute going, this, you know who this is, because you're here to listen to what he has to say. So I'm assuming you know who he is. And he's just being a little funny. So go ha-ha-ha-ha-ha when everybody goes ha-ha-ha-ha-ha, something makes me feel important. And then I'll come back to you when he's actually saying something important.
That's great. I know that I had a friend that moved here from Germany, and he didn't speak any English whatsoever. And he and his wife moved here together, and they did not know a single person. That she actually went down to the 7-Eleven and called the house, and he answered just to make sure the phone worked, because they didn't know anybody to have them call. And they did not even speak, like, hello, goodbye, but they learned English by renting Disney movies. They watched, like, The Little Mermaid a whole bunch of times. And does that help children's songs or movies that you know in learning a language?
The first thing I remember learning, it's funny that you say that, the first thing I learned ever in English was Jingle Bells. And I think it took me 30 years to go, oh, that's what it meant. So, but yes, a lot of my friends back home listen to songs and they translate songs and they learn English by translating songs and watching foreign movies. Absolutely. Anything that makes you passionate about a culture, about a language, about that, it helps. Heck, if I was a person that loves French cuisine and I would learn French just going through cooking books. And you know, maybe you will not learn all the words, but you will absolutely know measuring spoons and measuring things. But yes, anything that you're passionate about always helps. If you love soccer, if you love basketball, just read about basketball in a different language. If you love anything, just read it in a different language. Just start listening to things in a different language, and you can relate to. If you love basketball, and you're going to learn about, I don't know, swimming or bike riding in another language, what connection do you have to that? Nothing. But if you're watching a basketball game and you just turn, if you find it online maybe, or if you find a magazine that talks about basketball, of course you're going to already understand half of what they're saying because it's your world. So just start with something that you're really passionate about and something that you can relate to, and everything's going to just come piecing together.
That's such great advice. And I always ask people for, like, definitions. And what does the word language mean to you?
Well, to me, it's culture. A language is just the phonetic representation of a culture. It's just the expression of people's lives, present, past, and future. So it is definitely representing of the history and the culture of those people.
That's beautiful. That's great. Okay, as we're wrapping up, I've got a couple of questions for you that I just really would love you to share with people. So if somebody is interested in having a foreign exchange student or somebody come stay with them, where is the best place to go or what do you suggest that they do? Because I think that's a wonderful idea.
There are a few exchange student programs. I honestly, right now, I wouldn't be able to tell you on top of my head the top five. Because for me, people ask me, can you host my daughter? Can you host my friend? So, or I will call my friends and say, hey, does your daughter, or can I send you my friend? Can you host? Can you find a host? But the number one place, obviously, it's online. Just go and Google exchange student programs, and there is a few. As I said, I wouldn't name any because I really wouldn't recommend one above the other because I don't know them that closely. And then if you want to, just get in touch with schools and then go through. You always have to go, unfortunately, unless there is some sort of an agreement with the United States. Students coming inside the United States from any other country, they need a visa. So they need to go through an organization so that they can get a visa. If the student is over 18 and is going to college, then just call the schools, make yourself available, call high schools, call universities, make yourself available. A lot of places in Europe have a program called Erasmus, E-R-A-S-M-U-S, and that is an exchange program. Or a studying abroad program where your 6 months in a different college count towards your major. And you just can see if they are willing to do it with the United States. And it takes a little bit of work. If you want to start your own company, that's, I think, the best way to go about it because the college students can just request their own visa, their own student visa, without going through an organization. And then go to colleges and see if they can find a way to get that credit valid overseas, and then start looking for families that want to host, and or be the family who wants to host once a year, twice a year, And you can do that as a job. There, I just created a position for somebody. Contributing to the occupation in the United States.
That's great. That's so fabulous. I love that. Absolutely. I appreciate that, and thank you for that. And then for those that have not been abroad, that are now, you've got them packed as they were listening to you. They're already, their suitcases on their bed and half their wardrobe is in their suitcase. Three great traveling tips.
Wow. Always try local food, even if you find it disgusting. Try the local food. Don't go to places that have menus in English if you're not going to an English, I mean, if you're going to England, it's not going to go into a place that has a menu in English. It's a little tough. But if you're going to a country where English is not their first language, don't go to a restaurant with English menus. And just be daring. If you have allergies, if you have food allergies, people who have food allergies, make sure that you translate those food allergies in the language of the country you're going. You don't want to die while you're on vacation. You know, kind of spoils the whole vacation thing. But other than that, be brave. Be in an adventure. Traveling is great when you experiment like you were in first grade. And fearless, as I was saying earlier. Fearless. Just be fearless and experiment. But worse that happens, you don't like the food. Boo-hoo. I am sure that not going to through with a meal, it's not going to hurt anybody. So, but at least you experienced what they eat and who, and again, it's a way of experiencing their culture. Go to small cities. Look for small cities because sometimes they're more interesting than the big touristy cities. And third tip, pack light because you're always going to bring back stuff. So leave with just the minimum because you're always going to bring back stuff from where you go. So pack a half a suitcase and come back with two. That's what I do.
That's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful advice. I so appreciate you being with us today, and I'm so impressed by you, by your heart, your spirit, your soaring soul, your fearlessness, your unbelievable talent and mastery of words and translating life and art and compassion and talent and the pulse of what's happening in the world to all those around the world. And you're just so special and such a gift. And so I appreciate that you share all of these secrets and tools and techniques on truly how to lead an unlimited life, how to not have boundaries, how to not be trapped by any word or any country or any culture, but being able to be expansive and being part of any place that you are and allowing yourself to really enjoy the joy of humanity everywhere. And it's just always such a marvel just hearing you speak. And it's so amazing to me that you are so prolific and so profound and that English is not even your first language. I am always blown away. So,
oh, I'm sure that the accent and some of the words that were not proper or that were not perfect, I'm sure they give it away, but it's okay. I was told it makes me sexy, so I'll keep it.
It does. Absolutely, indeed it does. And it's better just to speak the truth and to share. I remember that when I was a little girl, I became Little Miss New Jersey. I don't think I ever told you this, but I was Little Miss New Jersey. And they do the interview, you know, where they ask you the big, you know, 11-hour question or whatever that is. And so many parents that have little girls in pageants prime them and they have them practice and they go through all these things at home. And my parents never did that. They always just allowed me to be who I was. And I danced, and that was my talent. And they just sort of let me rest in the laurels of that I danced and that I had this little heart. And so I walked up to the microphone and then came to my big question. And I was 9 years old, and they said, do you have any animals at home? And I said, just my brother. And I became Little Miss New Jersey. The whole audience laughed. But sometimes just the words you say when they're true are enough.
Yeah.
You don't have
to. Your brother is an animal. No, it wasn't really the truth, you know.
to me at that time. But, no, I love my brother now. You know, we have such a great relationship. But I love, you know, sometimes the words you choose, like you say, can make people laugh, they can make people cry, and your words are always so moving and so enriching and so touching and so enlightening. And so no matter what language you say it in, you just the fact that you share from your heart and your spirit and your soul, and that you're so committed to being that bridge and to helping people, that I'm just so grateful for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for being with us. We so look forward to having you back because you have such a wealth of information. And we will certainly reach out to Eric's book, and I think that his books now, and as you expand through your journey, and certainly such great advice for people that want to travel and that also want to send their children or bring people into their homes, which I think is just a wonderful way to be able to go through those boundaries.
Oh, absolutely. Growing up, I had probably 100 exchange students within the span of 5 years, 6 years. So it definitely was such a great experience to be with so many different people and to get to experience them. And it just opens up your world so much. And then I could totally reach out to a lot of them. And I have a friend in Australia who is waiting for me to go and see her. I have friends in Germany who are waiting for me to go there. I have friends in the Philippines who are waiting for me to go there, one in Peru. So I could probably, not saying tour the world, but close to it, and I think I'll be fine.
I know you'll be fine, but you are such a gift, and you are welcome everywhere, and you are always welcome on this show. So we look forward to having you back. And Annalisa, thank you so much for being with us today. And
thank you for having me.
For your fine words. So have a magical year, and we will look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much. Magical year to you, and I look forward to being on the show again.
Thank you. We look forward to it.
Bye.
Wow, what a wonderful guest. Imagine just leaving your country, going to another country, being a master of that language, and being able to help people translate, whether it be art, theater, film, books, knowledge, learning the diversity of different everything, what she's talking about, from medical to publishing to all of the different fields in which she became a master in, to be able to translate those fields. And I love what she talked about, the privacy for people and respecting celebrities and having that heart and having that clarity and that intuition and that instinct on when to report something and when to share something and how to share it. And I learned something about translating in television and film. I had no idea that it was the amount of characters that we never even think about, how quickly we speak and that how fast people can read, or the fact that if we make a joke and that joke doesn't translate and they have to choose to create a joke there or a cadence or a word that makes sense, and that really it takes so much talent and skill and technique to be able to be a translator. So much that you need to know, whether it's the field that you're translating in, whether it's the language that you're translating in, whether you're translating an energy, a time period, something like a movie, a television show, the comedy, all of that she's saying. It takes so much talent and such a wealth of information. And gosh, she does it in English, Italian, Spanish, French, German, I mean, with impeccability. So I love that. And I love the idea of having a foreign exchange student. Now I'm thinking, gosh, I would really love to have somebody here. I have, you know, certainly would love to be able to open my home and share for somebody to be able to come and be able to help them and teach them this culture and this country and share and see it through their eyes. What a beautiful experience it would be. And then I had an experience that I wanted to share with you before we finish off the hour, that I just returned from New York a couple days ago. And on my way back from New York, I had a quick layover in San Francisco. And as I was changing planes, I went to the gift shop. and there was a man patiently waiting in line at the gift shop, and he was from another country. And when he finally got up to his turn at the, you know, at the desk, at the clerk, he asked for a phone card. And the woman was so snide and so snappy and so rude, and she said that they don't sell phone cards there, and just dismissed him. Next. And then he turned back to her, and he took out money from his wallet, and he had American dollars, and obviously he didn't even know how much, like, what the American money was. And he laid out the American money in his hand, and he asked if she had coins that he just needed to make a local call so somebody could pick him up. And she snapped the register and said that she didn't have enough change for a local telephone call. And I saw this man, and I walked over to him, and I handed him my phone. And I said, here, you're welcome to use my phone. I said, do you know the number? And he just looked at me, and he took out something, and it had all the 0011s, you know, like all of the numbers to call the United States. And we tried to dial the number because I could figure out what San Francisco local was. And that number didn't work, and I tried another number that was under it, and it rang. And I handed him the phone, and he started to speak. And I'm not even sure what language he was speaking in, but the joy when someone answered the phone, and his face lit up, and this smile radiated from ear to ear. And so I backed away, and I started to browse the books because I wanted to give him a little privacy for his call. And I could see from where I was standing how happy this man was to have connected with this person on the phone. And when he finished his call, he came over, and he handed me the phone back with such reverence and such gentle grace. I've never had anybody hand me anything that beautifully in my life, and it was my own phone, but just the way he handed it to me, it was like he was giving me the greatest present I ever received. It was almost like he was laying the chalice out or something just beautiful at my feet. And his gratitude and appreciation for me letting him use my phone was something I've never experienced anyone that grateful in my life. And to see his eyes and to see his smile was such an amazing gift. And as he handed me back the phone, and I asked him if he needed to make another call, and he let me know that they were coming to get him, and he was so excited and he was good. And as he walked away, it was one local phone call. This man had never been to America before. This was his first experience of America, was a snappy, snide, rude clerk at the gift shop at the airport. And that would have been his experience of America. And I've never received so much appreciation in my life. And I got on the plane, and I was so astounded because the gift shop was packed that nobody else offered him help to make a local call. That was incredible to me. And when I came home, if you are on my Facebook, you know I posted it on my Facebook the very next morning. But what was most amazing was that within just a short time of my posting it on Facebook, 128 people liked it. And over 30 people wrote something. It moved them to actually write, like, this is what we should do. We always have to love people. We always have to be grateful. We always have to care. We always have to give. This is beautiful. I'm so glad you said this. This made my heart leap with joy. But 128 likes. This was just the next morning, before even the day started, before I even left my house or took a shower, just in the original post, immediately, 128 people liked it and over 30 people wrote something. And I went to get in the shower and tears were in my eyes, and I thought, it's amazing how many people were moved by the fact that I shared, that I helped somebody from another country make a local call. And so when we realize that we all have something to give and share. Give. If people are here from another country, help them. Make them aware what a beautiful, grand, loving place this is. And somebody will do that for you when you were in their world, in their country, and trying to figure out, as Annalisa said, don't go to a restaurant that the menu's in English. Let somebody help you. Let somebody teach you the culture. Let somebody give something wonderful to you, and you give. But the fact that we don't turn our eyes away, but that we open our hearts and we open our spirit and open our souls. And I was so proud of my Facebook friends for being touched and being moved and for all the beautiful things that they said. And the awareness that we all can give in this smallest little fashion, that letting a man make a local phone call could have such genuine gratitude, such beauty, such grace, such appreciation, and a look in his eyes I will never forget. So I wanted to share that, especially today, as we're talking about other languages and other cultures and other worlds, because it really changed and moved me, and your reactions to my sharing it really made a difference in my world and my life. So I want to thank you all for that as well. And we have such exciting shows coming up for you. So we, oh my gosh, we are talking about green architecture with one of the top green architects in the world. And I will tell you, this man is absolutely astounding. Jeffrey Collins, he is unbelievably blissful and incredible and can change the planet and change the world. And I'm so, so, so excited that he's going to be on the show. And we have Charles Gwynn coming on, and Charles is going to talk about reverse mortgages. Isn't it great for people that can actually get money out of their house and be able to really live an unlimited life, a beautiful life when they're here, and not just, you know, have all this stuff after they're gone, but that they could actually now get money out of their home and travel the world and do the things they want to do and give to their children and grandchildren while they're here to share and experience it. So we have that for you. We have deeper relation. We've got so many wonderful, wonderful guests ahead of us, everything from astrology to space to world to technology. So we so look forward to you sharing with us these incredible experiences, incredible worlds. Huge thank you to Annalisa Rinetti today for sharing everything that she shared and how to be a bridge between this world, other worlds, this languages, other languages, this country, other countries, no boundaries, no borders, how words can translate from the heart, the spirit, the soul, and even a word, like a man just looking in my eyes in gratitude and saying thank you without even knowing English words to say thank you, but I could see appreciation in a way that I've never seen it before. And so share, love, give, and choose words that actually come from your heart and bring joy, bring smiles, bring life, bring a foreign exchange student into your home, and travel the world and become part of the unlimited life and live that life you always knew you were meant to live. This is Nicole Brandon, The Limited Life. I look forward to talking to you next week. Have a magical journey. Until then.